All right. Hello and welcome to yet another Value Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Walker. And with me today, I'm excited to have Martin Werner. Martin is the founder of DD3 Capital, and he is the CEO of the SPAC that we're going to be talking about today. The ticker there is DDMX. Martin, how's it going?
Hey, great, Andrew. Nice to be with you.
Hey, great to have you here. Let me start this podcast the way I do every podcast. First, with a disclaimer, just remind everybody that nothing on here is investing advice. Martin is obviously the CEO of the SPAC that we're going to be talking about, so he's got a vested interest in this company. But everybody should just remember, please do your own diligence. Nothing's investing advice. And then the second way I start every podcast is with a pitch for you, my guest. This is actually going to be a really simple pitch. Your first SPAC merged into Betterware. The ticker there is BWMX. I believe for a while it was literally the most successful SPAC in the history of the SPAC markets. I looked it up yesterday. Just the common is the 18th or 17th most successful SPAC of all time. And then your units, you know, a SPAC comes with a unit, a warrant and a stock. Your units were a little more generous than a lot of other SPACs. So your SPAC is still one of the top 10 or top five performing SPACs of all time. You know, given that background, and I've got tons of friends who think Betterware today is still a very interesting company. We might talk about it a little at the end. But given that background, you know, it's kind of akin to venture capital investing. If somebody hits one grand slam, you at least want to see what they're doing for the next one, because there can be a little bit of a repeat effect. So given that background, I'm really excited to have you on to talk about your second SPAC, DDMX, which is merging with Codeair Online. So I'll stop there and flip it over to you. How did you find Codeair Online? What's the pitch? What did you see that made you want to take this public as your second SPAC?
Well, Andrew, when we placed our second SPAC, which was early December of last year, I mean, we hit the ground running. We've already done one SPAC. We knew what we wanted. We wanted a company that had high growth, preferably with a tech angle. We were very close to doing a deal with a fintech company on the lending space in Mexico. I spend my Christmas vacation talking to those guys every day. In the end, the deal didn't go through, so we didn't sign the LOI in January, and we started looking at our pipe. And then the opportunity to look at Codeair Online came up. You know, Codeair Online is connected to the Codeair Group. The Codeair Group has a big retail presence in Spain, Italy, and Latin America in casinos. And they because of COVID, the casinos were closed, they had no cash, so they couldn't find their online platform, which was growing rapidly and needed cash. So they ran a process to find a partner, and we participated, and they really liked the fit with us, the fact that they wanted to operate, and they wanted a minority investor, that we were the right partner. Mexico is a big country for them. I knew many of their partners in Mexico. So it was a very good fit. We very quickly, you know, signed an LOI. We work on the BCA, and we got a deal that we think is very attractive for investors, and that will work well in NASDAQ.
Perfect. Let's go back, and I want to talk about just, you know, you're actually the second SPAC sponsor we've had on, and I think I spend a lot of time in the SPAC world, and I just think the whole way a SPAC comes together and merges with a company is interesting. So let's talk about the process for merging with Codeair, and then we can dive a little bit with Codeair. The first thing, when I was reading through your proxy, I think the first thing that jumped out to me is I hadn't seen this disclosed. I've seen, you know, every SPAC discloses, hey, we reached out to 15 companies and signed a LOI with seven. But your background really made clear, hey, we reached out. There were three companies we were thinking about. And you even list the reasons. You mentioned one of them, but you even list the reasons for each three. You say, these were great companies, but, you know, I think it was the second company reached out. It just wasn't public company ready. The third company you reached out, I can't remember, but you gave the reasons why you couldn't merge with them. And then in early January, actually, I'll stop there and then we can go to Codeair. But could you just talk a little bit about what the process was and why you turned down these kind of first three companies?
I mean, our background is in banking. I ran the Mexico office of Goldman Sachs for 16 years. My partner, Jorge, co-founder of DD3, was also a banker for 20 years. And he was also a private equity investor with a big Brazilian PE firm. So we understand these processes, and we know how to very quickly look at companies when we have the right data. So initially we were very like enthusiastic about the fintech space, and it was a space that our partners in the pipe wanted to look at. And we find a company that even today is looking at doing a SPAC deal in Mexico. We really like the team there. The company was probably too early stage. And to be honest, on the fintech space, the lending side is probably the more risky. because yeah. people are really focused on payments more than lending, but lending also works. So we look at that, we learn a lot. As I said, we were very close to getting a deal done, but in the end, you know, deals are complicated. Things didn't work out. It wasn't the right fit at that time because of what they needed. And they need an immediate injection of capital anyway. So we passed on that one. And then we had a pharma company we're looking at too. That was a very interesting company, very different, more a value play, a very big company in Mexico. In that case, the issue was valuation because that company was in a space that's called branded generics. So branded generics is a very you can have very high valuations or very low because they could be more branded or more generics.
I'm laughing because I know the space. I used to be at Bain and I covered healthcare and I know the space very well.
So of course they thought they were more branded. We thought they were more generic. So in the end, you know, we couldn't get to the valuation. That's a fantastic company. Eventually we would love to take it public. So we look at that company and then of course, because we have a pipe that is pre-committed in SPAC number two, you know, we did the initial analysis, but before signing anything, we always went to our partners. So we went to Barron and to MG, and that was really a great process. So we discussed with them the opportunities before signing an LOI. So we keep them up to date, but we do a very kind of scientific approach. I mean, we create a model for the company. We look at comparables. We look how they trade, and we run the numbers. And then we check the tires in the way of calling people we know that know the space without giving information, but just trying to become very quickly, get up to date on the space, see how that could trade in NASDAQ, if they have the growth, the technology, the team, the numbers. So we can do that in 2 weeks for a company, no? Yep. So we did that, you know, for the fintech company, we did for the pharma company. We had an opportunity in the low-cost airline space that was super attractive, but in the end, they preferred to go for the regular IPO, no? But very quickly, and we look at many other companies. So we do that all the time. And then because DD3 is not just a SPAC sponsor, it's a financial firm in Mexico that has credit funds, special opportunity funds. We do M&A. So we're constantly talking to investors and entrepreneurs. So we're in the flows. And that creates a lot of opportunities for the SPAC. So when we're looking at something that maybe they come to see us for something else, we say, hey, guys, a SPAC will be great for you guys. Will you think about that?
Yep.
So we're always talking to investors, to companies, and to people. But anyway, we look at a number of companies before. We do a very thorough process. We involve our partners, and we make decisions jointly. So in the end, I think that, you know, once we saw the Codere Online opportunity, we really like it. And we think that we have a fantastic deal, and the company kind of checks all the boxes that we need for a SPAC to work in NASDAQ and be a successful stock.
Perfect. And I'll just lob in two more things, and then we're going to go to Codere. The first is, you know, I've written about SPACs extensively on the blog. We invest in SPACs all the time. And I think one of the things you said with DD3, you know, you're not just a SPAC sponsor. You're involved in companies in a lot of ways. Like, I think when you're looking for SPAC sponsors, you want someone who the only way they're ever going to get paid is not, oh, we need to get this SPAC deal done. You know, you want someone who's talking to 100 companies and saying, hey, you guys should do a merger. Oh, you know what's right? For you specifically, a SPAC is right, because if you're one of the kind of generic, just like launching a SPAC, they're going to get the worst SPAC deals. There's not, you know, they're going to get the bottom dregs. And it's not really going to work. So I like that about you guys. You guys were also kind of interesting. Barron Funds was your partner in the pipe. They had a forward purchase agreement. And you mentioned that when you were looking at deals, you'd go to them, you'd get feedback, you talk to them. So, and that's unique. You know, there are companies that there are plenty of SPACs, not all of them, but there are quite a few who do have kind of forward purchase agreements with people, but I haven't really heard of them working as a partner with you guys. So could you just explain how that relationship came about and how you work with them? And then we'll dive really heavily into Codere.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we learned a lot in the Betterware deal, Andrew. I mean, it was a very, very difficult deal to close because it was very hard to raise pipe money. We had really no pipe money. And then the COVID pandemic started as we were closing.
Yeah.
So, and then also it was at the time when Mexico just went, you know, a political transition from a party from the center to a party more on the left. And then all the private sector was very worried about the new president. So they were all thinking about how do I send money outside of Mexico, not invest more in Mexico. So it was very hard to raise money locally. And then when we did the roadshow in the US, they said, hey, this is a Mexican company. Who are your Mexican investors?
Yep.
So it was like a game that it was very hard to converge. So we had one family office that was writing a big check, And then a week before closing, they told us, hey guys, you know, COVID came, we cannot commit, we're out. So at that point, you know, we levered DD3 and we put out the money because we believe in Betterware. We saw the company was a strong company, had a strong cash flows, that eventually we will pay the loan and it was going to work. So we back with our money the company in a big way. It was a very small IPO because we just had close to $30 million to IPO the company. Oof. And it was a very tough process. So after that, once we closed Betterware, we said, we're never going to do a SPAC again. Never. After a few months, things started looking better. The company was doing great. You know, we felt we learned a lot. And we said, okay, let's do another one. So when we did the other one, the first thing we said is that the key weakness of our first one was the lack of capital that's pre-committed.
Yep.
But we said, this time, we're only going to launch it if we have a pipe pre-committed. I mean, pre-committed subject to liking the company we find, of course, no? So we went out and with the help of our bank doing the SPAC, we approached US investors and Mexican investors, and we wanted one US investor and one Mexican investor so that the problem we had with Betterware was going to be over. So we had both legs. So we found a great US investor, which is, of course, Baron Capital. We love those guys. They're super smart. They know most spaces. They understand growth companies. So that was an excellent partner. And then in Mexico, we knew this firm in Monterrey that was a multifamily office, an asset manager, MG Capital, very smart guys. They're also our partners in Betterware. So we went to them. They liked the idea. So both of them partnered with us with the forward purchase agreement. So that was a big difference. And the way we like to treat our partners is the way like we would like to be treated if we were doing an FPA. So we would like to be in the kitchen looking at the deal, not in the dining room waiting for the turkey to arrive. No. So you really want them to say, hey, this is what we're looking at. Do you like this one, that one? So we did some preview work. So we didn't want to waste their time. But whenever we had an opportunity that we thought it was kind of at the stage where it was serious, we will prepare an investment memo and we will have a call with them and we discuss it. And they will say, hey, we may like this at this valuation, this we don't like, this sector we don't invest in. You know, like there was one sector that we wanted to invest that the Baron guy said, forget it, we're not going to do that. No, that's a sector we don't invest in. So that was the process that we did. And, you know, we all liked the Codere Online opportunity and went through it. But even though we reached an LOI very quickly, we looked at a lot of opportunities before that.
Fantastic.
And as I said, we're close to signing another one, you know, in close to New Year's.
So let's turn to Codere Online. So sticking with the deal process, so you guys, if I'm remembering the process correctly, in January, you signed the LOI, or maybe it was the reach out,
In January, we signed an NDA.
And the initial talks were $250 to $300 million in enterprise value. And then the talks, you don't announce the deal till June. But when you do announce the deal, the valuation is $300 million. So you're kind of spot on. So it's about 6 months of work from start to finish. So valuation doesn't really change. What are you guys discussing and kind of finalizing in that 5 or 6 months from the NDA to announcing the deal?
The key is the LOI. So the LOI was signed, I think, end of February, early March.
Yep.
And the LOI already had the valuation.
Yep.
So we signed the LOI, but then from the LOI to the BCA, the business combination agreement, the LOI is non-binding. The BCA is binding.
Yep.
So it's a lot of legal work more than like a transactional work. Like the basic of the transaction are in the LOI, but the BCA has a lot more stuff about the board, about many other things. And it's a big legal document. So we really spend a lot of time working on the BCA.
Okay.
That's why it took us so long to get to the announcement, because that was when we signed the binding document.
So when you guys signed the LOI in late February, early March, you guys were pretty buttoned up. Y'all were ready to go, like assuming in due diligence, no huge legal issues or anything popped up. Y'all were ready to go. That's interesting because I've heard other SPAC sponsors who've talked to me, you know, I'll read these proxies, I'll talk to them, and they'll have put out 7 LOIs or something. They'll be like, oh, you know, the LOI, it's really just a way to keep going with deals. It's not binding it's not binding until the BCA is announced, but they kind of look at it as it's a handshake. You shake everyone's hand with an LOI just to get in there.
To be honest, I mean, and also Mexico is a different market than Latin America. In the US, there are many more SPACs. I mean, the way we work, when we sign an LOI, we're super serious. And we sign it with you. And even though it may not have an exclusivity, that's the way we approach it. Because also, we do a lot of work in terms of, you know, the due diligence, the numbers. So And we have our we don't run a firm with 200 people. We have like 25 people at DD3. So we really, the team really dives into the company. Perfect. So when we sign the LOI, is to get the BCA done. We don't like signing many LOIs and having many. I mean, we have a pipeline, and if the deal doesn't work, we'll go to another one. But once we commit to get it done. So we're all really working hard on that target, and we're really focused on getting the BCA done.
Great. All right. Well,
we'll approach it.
I think we've done all the background of the SPAC and everything. Let's turn to the company itself, Codere Online, online gaming, LATAM. I believe they're the largest online gaming company in Spain? Is that right? Am I remembering that right from the call?
I think they have a significant market share in Spain. I think probably the largest, but they have 20-25% market share in online gaming in Spain. And they're very big also on the retail side in Spain.
Yep. So yeah. They're online gaming, Spain, Mexico. They're going to go further into some LATAM companies. But what attracts you to Codere Online specifically?
I think there are four key things that we like about Codere Online immediately. First of all, it's a high growth sector. Online gaming in Latin America is in the early innings. And then it's also a sector that has a lot of use of technology. It's online. No? So it's technology driven, great economic scale. No costs come down as you increase the mass of users of your platform. And we know that in the NASDAQ market, they want high growth companies with a tech angle. So that fit really the bill. The second thing is the team. I mean, the team that runs Codere Online is a team that they hire from Israel. Moshe Dre, the CEO, is a guy that has more than 15 years experience in the online gaming sector. The whole team has worked with him in gaming. So they really understand the sector, and it's a complex sector. I mean, these are a lot of technology, the marketing, the onboarding of clients, the retention of clients. It's very sophisticated. So the team is an excellent team, and we really like the team. Then the third issue is the connection to the retail stores, because having the retail footprint, which is huge in the case of Codere, they're really big in Spain, big in Argentina, big in Mexico, they are in Panama, they're in Colombia. So that the best clients that you can have are the omni-channel clients.
Yep.
Like they play more. So we have a base of millions of clients from the retail stores that we can tap, and we can bring them to the online platform. So we're really focused on doing that, but we're going to be even more focused on that. So that brings the best clients for us. So that's a great connection to have. And then finally, the valuation. I think that we're acquiring the company at 2.3 times 2022 revenues. I mean, if you look at the US comps, they're like median is 7, but DraftKings is north of 10 times revenues 2022. And then if you look at Europe, companies with almost no growth and will be growing at 40-50% a year next year, 30% the year after that, companies with no growth trade at average of 3 or north of 3. So we think the valuation is really attractive. So yep. Those four things were the key things that we saw that gave us confidence. This is something that's really going to work on NASDAQ.
Yeah, and just one other thing, you mentioned in there the omni-channel. I thought that was something really interesting because I've looked at Penn and I've looked at some of the other, I guess, Penn, I don't think Penn was in your deck, but obviously Penn with Barstools as a competitor, DraftKings is probably the better comp for you on the US side. But one of the things Penn has said before is they're like, hey, we've got all these regional casinos. That gives us, in the long term, that gives us such a huge edge over someone like DraftKings who doesn't actually own the casinos. Exactly what you're saying, omnichannel, the best customer you can get, the lowest customer acquisition cost is somebody who's in your physical casino. You hit them with an ad, you get them to download your app, you get them. It's actually the lowest cost way you can get somebody. And yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Spain
is the lowest cost, Andrew. They're the ones who gamble more. So their average ticket is higher. So yep. The combo is super, super powerful.
So Spain is Codere's most mature market. As you said, maybe they're not the largest, but they're up there. They're one of the largest, significant market share in Spain. And if I'm correct right now, the EBITDA margin in Spain is around 20% on, obviously the whole company is losing money because they're investing a lot into marketing and stuff, but Spain has a positive EBITDA margin. Like that is cash flow positive. That is proof of concept right there. Am I thinking about that correctly?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And what's the Spanish market kind of growing at for Codere?
The Spanish market is a mature market. And the Spanish market is undergoing a transition right now because the government came out with very strong regulations regarding the marketing of online gaming.
Yep.
So that came out this year. And actually, we had to update our numbers this year because the impact of that on the short term was harder on Codere because you couldn't do a lot of promotions. So in Spain, we actually had the third quarter was down and now things are normalizing. And we think that these changes are good for us in the medium to long term because many new players will get out of the market because of the it's going to be very tough to do marketing.
Yep.
But we have the retail presence, a big market share. So in the long term, in fact, we're already in the fourth quarter gaining market share in Spain. So long term, it's going to be a market that's going to be dominated by fewer players because of the restrictions on publicity. But that really started this year. But it's a more mature market that grows like with GDP.
And then Mexico, obviously, you guys are going to go through a lot of, you guys are going to enter a lot of other markets, but it seems like Mexico is kind of the big emerging market that you guys are attacking right now. Am I thinking about that correctly?
I think in Latin America, we are already operating in three markets, Mexico, Colombia, and Panama. But Mexico is by far the largest. And also in Mexico, Codere has a very big retail presence. Yep. So Mexico, let's say, is the easiest and closest growth opportunity. And then the Mexican market has one player that has an 85% market share. So that is unsustainable. There's no market in the world when one player has 85%. So the question is, who's going to gain market share from them?
Yeah, I was about to ask, you guys mentioned this on the call. It's Caliente, and y'all said 85, 90%.
Yeah, Caliente. I mean, they've done a great job. It's a fantastic platform. But I mean, in fact, the team from Caliente used to work for Moshi in another company.
Okay.
Their technological platform is the same one as we have. We both use Playtech in Mexico as our, you know, provider of technology. So we have a product that has all the capabilities. We have they also have retail. We have retail, but we think that we're the best position player now with the resources from the SPAC coming in to really go head to head with Caliente and win market share in Mexico.
How did they get to 85 or 90%? Because as you said, I've never heard of somebody having that high of market share across a country.
I mean, I think that they've done a great job. I mean, you have to give them that. They've done a great job. They invest a lot of money in marketing. They're super aggressive. They're everywhere in the sports team. They're everywhere in Mexico. So they've done a fantastic job. They were the early movers. So they did everything right. They moved first, but they have a dominant share today.
Perfect. And then okay, so just looking at projections, you mentioned earlier that this year might be a little wonky because there's COVID reopening in Spain. You guys are getting, the regulations are changing, which was a headwind to Q3. But, you know, as with all SPACs, you guys publish projections for the next couple of years and your SPAC deals. One of the things that jumped out to me was the projections for, I think they go out to 2024, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't have the slides right next to me, but the projections actually call for accelerating growth over the next 3 years versus, you know, what you guys have done over the past couple of years. And obviously, again, past couple of years, regulation changes, COVID headwinds, all that sort of stuff. But what gives you confidence that there's going to be accelerating growth at Codere? Like, what's kind of driving that?
Yeah, the growth is not accelerating. I mean, the growth is, this year is going to be like ballpark $100 million in revenues, net gaming revenues.
Yep.
Next year, we are about 150. And then the year after that, we are at 200. So it's 50% growth in 2022 and then 33% growth in 23. So the rate of growth decelerates, but we really go high next year because we have all the resources from the SPAC. So we do aggressively in marketing, aggressively in tech. And then we are in the projections that we show in the presentation, there's one new market that we enter, which is very big, which is the city of Buenos Aires.
Yep.
Buenos Aires is the third largest city in Latin America. So we have the license for the city already, and we are about to get the green light to start operating. It could either be 1st of December or early January, but we're ready to go. And then as many big cities, the city of Buenos Aires is surrounded by what is called the province of Buenos Aires. And we're also in close discussions to get a license for the province. So that would be huge because the province of Buenos Aires is where Codere Retail has their largest retail presence in Argentina. So the city plus the province is a huge market. So the city projections are already in the numbers, but we don't have the province. And then other provinces in Argentina will probably come in. We're talking to the Brazilian government. It looks like they're going to regulate online gaming very soon. And another benefit of the retail, Andrew, is that the retail company has a longstanding, you know, presence in all these markets, and they've been talking to the regulators for years.
Yep.
So when something opens up, they really know them because they trust them. They've been around for years. So you're really also way ahead with the regulators to get these licenses. And we only operate in countries where we have the full license because there are other places in gaming that operate remotely from other locations in the country without being regulated. We are a fully regulated, fully licensed player in the country that we are, and we're looking at new countries. So if Brazil opens up or the rest of Argentina, or we're talking to the state of Puerto Rico, for example, for a license, all this is not in the projections. So any of these is another geography, another push. So the projections are very conservative and do not include any new market, with the exception of the city of Buenos Aires, where already have a license and are almost about to start.
So the projections I'm looking at right now, $400 million in 2027 revenue is the projection. That's six countries: Spain, Mexico, Colombia, Panama, Italy. And I shouldn't have said countries because city of Buenos Aires is in there.
Yeah.
Six countries. So with the $400 million in revenue, I think you guys have a projection. It was like slide 25 in the deck. I think it's projecting 20% EBITDA margins in the long term once you kind of hit that $400 million steady state. Yeah. Can you walk me through $400 million in revenue? What is the financial statement going to look like if you guys hit that $400 million of revenue to get to 20% EBITDA margins?
I mean, I think the key to get there is that not only we will continue growing in Mexico, we're going to grow in Colombia, in Panama, we'll grow in Argentina. And I think that, you know, we'll start entering a couple of new countries, but we with the resources from the SPAC and the technology, we feel very confident that the numbers, as I said before, are really conservative numbers.
Okay, perfect. And then you mentioned going into new countries a couple of times. I think one of the unique things with this SPAC was you guys are saying, hey, we've got the pipe, right? We've got the pipe, which will deliver $70 or $75 million of something in guaranteed cash. And you guys have said, we've based this entire transaction on only the pipe money coming in, right? If there's 100% redemptions, this transaction is based on only the pipe money. If, you know, hopefully, I think the SPAC has $125 million in cash. Hopefully, there's no redemptions. If we get the $125 million in cash, we're going to use that to fuel growth. So if no one redeems, everybody here goes, you know, nothing's investment advice. So I won't even say that. But if no one redeems the SPAC, what is the company going to do with that extra $125 million?
Okay, if we have the additional money, I think that we'll accelerate some investments. And then that, you know, hopefully we'll try to open new markets faster. So for example, if Brazil really opens up, you can open up Brazil with $30 million or you can open up Brazil with 50. So you can use more money, go more rapidly. So I think that it will allow us to enter some markets faster and also probably to do some technology upgrades sooner.
Gotcha. So it's really just about if you guys get the extra $125 million, going faster, new countries, more marketing, grabbing more players.
And also the possibility to buy something.
Yep. What would the company be looking to buy if they were looking to go in organic growth? Would it just be the leading player in a new country? Are you guys going to look to, you know, we've seen DraftKings has gone and buy. I think it'd be too large for you, but DraftKings has gone and bought their player management system. They've gone and bought the sports book that's giving them all the sports lines and that type of stuff. What would Codere be looking to buy?
I think that we could go to a geography we're looking to come in and buy a player that's already there that has a strong presence that allow us to kind of plug and play, you know, that we're already in, we can upgrade it and put in our platform and we can add another country. Or maybe we can add another player that is in a country we're already in that we can have, you know, a bigger market share. So we look at both new markets and existing markets.
One of the new markets that you guys talked about, and I know this is, I don't want to say moonshot, but it's on the more aggressive end of the spectrum, but there's a full slide devoted in there to the target is actually expanding into the US. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was interesting. And it was the one thing in the deck where I read it and I was like, ooh, that doesn't fit my mental model of something that would be really doable. But I'll present my pushbacks. But I want to ask you, like, why do you think Codere has a chance or has a right to win a little bit of share inside of the US?
I think that the US market is phase two. I think that phase one is where we're in right now in the city of Buenos Aires. That wasn't the projections. Phase two is Latin America, is Brazil, is Puerto Rico, it's Chile, Uruguay, Peru. There are many countries where we can go into Latin America. And that, those are the markets that we know where the retail franchise is already present. So we have a lot of going on. I think that phase three is the US. And the US is really because the Hispanic population likes Latin American sports. And we're connected to sports. We sponsor many teams. We have a lot of presence. So it's really anchoring the Hispanic person in the US and the fact that, you know, people from Mexico like to play, you know, look at Mexican soccer. People from, you know, Central America want to look at Central American soccer and stuff like that. So we have that product. We know the sports and we can generate the engagement. So that would be the angle to go to the US. But as I said, that phase three.
Yeah, I don't want to provide too much pushback on that because as you're saying, it's phase three. But I guess in my head, like I haven't seen, not that I'm a gaming expert at all, but I haven't seen like a niche gaming product really attract significant market share? And when I look at it, I don't know, like, if you're a serious soccer fan, it doesn't seem like you're underserved by the offerings that a DraftKings or a BetMGM or anything is offering right now. So, and also it seems like we're in a land grab mode right now. By the time you guys kind of launched the US product, it seemed like a lot of the land grab would have been taken. Like, one of the things I like about you guys is these emerging markets, they're just about to come online. You're going to use the cash to go win that land grab right now. You've got the retail market, so you can be first. If you're coming into the US market in 2024, 2025, it seems like a lot of that land grab would already have been taken up.
I mean, as I said, that's really like the third phase of the growth. So it's nothing that we're really working on right now. We've been approached by a couple of media companies in the US that are focused on the Hispanic market that wanted to talk to us.
Oh, interesting.
But so far, you know, we're really focused on the markets where we are and the next phase. So we're not talking about that, but we've been approached on that because these guys want the connection to gaming. Many teams also want connections to gaming. So, I mean, we don't know how the space will grow definitely everywhere. I mean, and it will change. But I think that if we have a strong presence in Latin America, given that you have like 40 million Hispanics living in the US connected to Latin America, certainly there's something to be done. The question of how you will fit that, I mean, you know, we look at that if we're still an independent company, because the other thing that you have that we look when we look at Codere is that we could acquire some things, but we could also be acquired, no? Because if you look at Latin America today, I mean, there are very few gaming companies with a multi-country approach. So Codere Online provides you with two countries in Europe, Spain and Italy, and then you have already four in Latin America and more are coming. So in one company, you have all these markets where you're already there, and then you have the omni-channel connection.
Yep.
So I think, you know, it's also, you know, it would be interesting to see whether we are the acquirer or we're being acquired.
Martin, you're speaking my language. And, you know, in the SPAC world, Golden Nugget Online, they very similar, right? I would say it's obviously not complete apples to apples, but it's very similar to the Codere Online story, right? Golden Nugget, regional casinos, Golden Nugget Online goes public through a SPAC. It's public for 6-9 months. And then it's Penn who's buying them. I think Penn. It was Penn who's buying them right now. But somebody looks at him and says, hey, they've got the online presence. They've got the connection to the physical retail. Obviously, they don't own the physical retail, but they've got the connection. We'll just go buy them. And that's the perfect bolt on. And for you guys, they're online in multiple countries, really large presence in Spain, growing presence in Mexico, lots of land grab. Go buy them. You get the physical connection without actually having to own the physical stores. It makes sense as a bolt on for a lot of people.
I agree.
There you go. Let's talk, you know, one thing, I look at SPACs a lot, and one thing I always think about is, hey, you know, my big worry with SPACs is the winner's curse, right? Anybody who's ever been in an auction where you're buying a company or any type of auction, right? The winner's curse, where you're the one who wins the auction, and then you immediately look around and say, oh, I paid $10 and everybody else offered $8, so I just paid $2 too much. I won the auction, but I actually lost. When you're in a SPAC, you don't really have any operating synergies, any of that. So you guys are merging with Codere. And I just want to talk about, like, why did Codere, the retail company who will maintain a significant equity stake in this, who still has the connection that, but why did they choose? I know they said on the call that they never considered an IPO, but why did they choose to go with you guys? Why was a SPAC the right route? Why is DDMX not subject to the winner's curse that I just described?
Because they wanted a partner that was the right partner, that was going to be helpful, but was not going to want to operate the business. And the other, in the process that they ran, we were the only SPAC. The other alternatives were private equity firms or strategics. So strategics were out because they wanted to run the business, and they want to run the business. They know how to run these businesses. And then PE firms, usually they need to be much more involved in the running of the business, because that's what they sell to their investors, no? We bring operational expertise, we help. And these guys, they knew how to run the business. They hired this team from Israel to run it. They've been there for a couple of years. So the question was getting the resources and then how to manage as a public company. So we can provide them with capital. We have financial expertise. We are, you know, very connected in Mexico, where it's their key growth market, so we can help them. We knew their Mexican partners because they have a Mexican company, CIE, which is their partner in retail. So I think that we click all the right boxes. So, and we know, because we know of other offers, we were not the higher offer.
Interesting. What was the highest offer at?
I think it was between 30 and 50% above our offer.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Remember, this was February of this year when gaming was, I mean, it's still booming today, but it was like, you know, crazy in February.
Penn stock was $120 per share. And I think it's $80 per share now. So this will be very softball. I don't want to lob this up too easy for you, but I would guess the fact that you guys were a LATAM focused SPAC. And as we said at the beginning, you guys could guarantee, hey, we have this forward purchase agreement. No matter what, we're going to deliver $70 million. I would get, you were the only spec in there, but I would guess that was a key selling point that no matter what, they had a minimum amount of cash that was coming in from this deal.
Yeah. I mean, the minimum crush was crucial. And also they really liked the fact that one of our two key investors was Barron Funds. They highly respected them.
Yeah. They want that Tesla valuation.
Yeah, we all do.
Look, I think we've covered a lot on Codere. I did have a couple other questions, but I think we've covered the majority of them. I want to get some betterware questions in, but the focus of this podcast is obviously Codere. Is there anything we didn't talk about that you're really excited about with Codere, or any risk that you think the market is really concerned about that you kind of think the market has wrong that you want to address before we turn it over maybe to betterware?
Well, I mean, I think that we are very, you know, we think that Codere is a great investment. As I mentioned to you, we think it clicks all the boxes. It's a high growth company in a high growing sector. It has an excellent management team. We have the omni-channel connection, and we have the right valuation. So we're really excited, and we hope that we can hit out of the park like we did with Betterware.
Perfect. And just for listeners, what is the, I know, but you've got the meeting coming up. What is the meeting? Yeah. What's the timeline and everything for listeners?
You're kind of thinking the meeting is in November 16th. And then that's the day when people have to, November 16th is when people have to tell you whether they redeem or not. And then the meeting will happen between November 18th and November 20th. And shortly after that, the stock will start trading as Codere Online.
Perfect. Let's turn over to Betterware Mexico. Again, this is one of the best performing SPACs of all time. You're still on the board there. I've got friends, my buddy Jeremy Raper, who I believe will be coming on the podcast again in the very near future, is still very involved, very bullish on this. So I've kind of been following it out the corner of my eye. I think the stock, weak earnings, I've got lots of pings on it. So I just want to turn it over to you. How are you feeling about Betterware right now? You know, what's the outlook there?
I mean, I think what's going on with Betterware is that Betterware was a company that during COVID grew by three times.
Yep.
Three times. So the program that we had for the next 5 years was compressing 1 year. So people got used to seeing numbers that was 100, 200% growth in a quarter compared to last year. That was crazy. And they did a great job operationally because, you know, these guys, Betterware is a company that sells home organizational goods, like for your bathroom, for cleaning, for the house, no? And the average ticket of what we sell is around $5 to $10. And they have a distribution network of, you know, what they call these associates of more than a million women all over Mexico, mainly women that, you know, are buyers and sellers of our products. So this platform went from around 400,000 women pre-COVID to 1.2 million women. Because many women with COVID, they were not working anymore. They wanted to do something. So they started being active with Betterware. What's happening now after COVID is that some of these women are going back to their regular jobs. So some are keeping the Betterware selling, you know, on the side, but some cannot do it, no? The house, the work. So our churn is higher than normal. Churn is usually around 2.5-3% per month in this group of women. And right now we are north of 4, and it's coming down. But it's very high because you have the COVID transition.
Yep.
So what the company has been doing greatly is that, for example, in the last quarter, we lost close to like, you know, 450,000, you know, associates. But we gained close to that. So they're really, you know, increasing the sales force in an amazing way. As soon as the churn rate, which is trending down already, comes back to normal, then we're going to start growing again. But the problem is that, you know, you don't see it in the numbers yet. And this transition to becoming so much larger, I think that people, they don't know where the long-term growth of the company is.
Yep.
So the fact that you're seeing like more stability in the numbers now, and you know, because sales were up like 4%, EBITDA was below what people expected, but still, you know, 700 million pesos, the dividend is very strong. I think that what you have right now is that, you know, after that huge growth, people need to understand better where the long-term growth of the company is. And we're seeing that. The company still has fantastic fundamentals, but that's the transition, and that's why the market has penalized us, because you know they were expecting higher numbers, and the numbers are still pretty good, but not as high as the market expected.
Let me ask, and again, I am no expert on Betterware. I've only followed it out the corner of my eye because it's one of the best performing SPACs of all time. A bunch of my friends still follow it, but just a very silly question. Obviously, churn for the distributors is very high right now, but I would guess that the distributors who are churning are probably a little bit lower value than your core distributors. You know, if you had somebody who joined because they were home during COVID and they were just looking for something to do, and now they're churning as they go back to the workforce, I guess that's a lower sales rep. Obviously, more sales rep is generally better, but I guess that's a lower quality sales rep who's, you know, less sales, less value, less lifetime value. Am I thinking about that correctly, or am I off a little bit?
I mean, I think that in general, they do a fun part of the core expertise of the Betterware team is managing this huge, you know, sales group. You know?
Yep.
So they're really good at training them, motivating them. They have a, Betterware has a reward program for associates where linked to your sales, you get points. And with the points, you get prices that are like furniture and appliances. So many of these women, because they want to contribute to the house, they say, not only I'm selling and buying Betterware products, but this year I want to get like the dining room table. So I'm going to get the dining room, and that's my contribution to the house. So there's a lot of like a lot of hard work and pride of these women of, you know, contributing to the house, or maybe a new TV or a new washing machine. And so the price component, the way they manage the points program, the motivation, the meetings with the workforce. I mean, the CEO of the company, Andres Campos, travels 2 days a week, and everywhere he goes, he just goes to meet the sales force. No? So he meets all these women that are the associate base, the distributors. He's talking to them. He's looking at the way to finesse these programs, finesse the products that we sell. He also gets a lot of feedback about the products. Hey, we love this one. Why don't you change this one to that? So these guys are really, really good at what they do. Because if you look at the numbers, I mean, just to understand and put it in perspective, you know, Andrew, these guys did roughly around $40 million in 2019 as EBITDA. They did 100 in 2020, and they will do north of 150 this year. So, I mean, going to 40 to 150 is yep. huge. I mean, I was in Guadalajara 2 days ago for the board meeting. I mean, these guys distribute 500,000 boxes per week. You know what's that? 500,000 boxes per week. I mean, it's a huge logistical operation, and mm-hmm. they triple the size. So they've been able to do all that, grow the workforce, grow the logistics. And now they're really focusing on improving the products. I mean, they used to have a catalog every 6 weeks. Now we're going to monthly catalogs. They used to have like only 10% of new products per catalog. We're going to 30%. So they're doing a lot of things. They're really improving like the app. So and e-commerce. So there are a lot of things going on in the company that, you know, gives us confidence that the growth is going to be there, and the company is going to grow at 10 to 15% per year post this transition. But because the numbers had this huge jump, it's very hard right now to understand. And because of the problem of the higher churn in associates, the market really doesn't know exactly where this growth will come out. So I think that this is going to take, you know, a few quarters for people to understand that it's still a fantastic company. You know, the growth is there. I mean, because still the market share we have in Mexico and the houses we reach 20% of the houses. They want to go to 40%, and they want to get there in the next 4 years, no? So I think there's a lot of growth in Mexico. There are many, and then the distribution channel that we have is super powerful. I mean, we have, you know, 1.2 million women connected to us. We could do a lot of things with them. We're starting a telephony program where we're selling mobile phones, but we can do many other things, no? So I think that this is a very powerful company, super well run. You know, Andres is a great CEO. You know, our chairman, Luis, founded the company. He really understands direct selling. He used to work at Tupperware for many years, running the Americas. So this is a fantastic company that just did 5 years in 1 year. So that's a lot. And now people need to understand where the growth will be. And then the dividend yield is 7% today. So we pay a 7% dividend. We're a growing company. I think that it's a fantastic stock. I love the story. I love the stock.
Yeah. And it's just your thing with, hey, the growth is a little bit slower than maybe the market thought because you're coming off COVID, which pulled forward 5 years. Obviously, this is a little bit different, but I follow Herbalife a little bit. You see it over there, which has similar trends, or, you know, just the cable companies, which are some of my favorite companies. 2020 was the best year ever because everybody was locked down at home, and anyone who didn't have cable or had DSL was like, I just got to upgrade. I've got to do everything over Zoom. And now you're seeing the company sell off because they're saying, hey, we can't match our 2020 growth rate. We're still growing, you know, we're still growing. We're still profitable, all this sort of stuff, but the market's just slamming them. And it's kind of like, yeah, they're not COVID recovery plays anymore, but it doesn't mean they're not growing. It doesn't mean they're not doing great. And I just think, you know, again, I'm not an expert on Betterware, but with the cable companies, with a lot of these, I think the market has shot much too quickly and maybe rewarded the COVID reopening plays a little too aggressively. But that's just my feel.
I think this is very similar, and right? I really like the way you compare it. This is a company that had this. I mean, the cable companies didn't grow by 300%.
So wish they had, but it wasn't even close.
This is the cable companies on steroids.
Yep.
So and the company is maintaining the three times because we're just not growing faster now, but we're keeping what we have, no, which is huge. So now we're just recalibrating the growth. And as I told you, the key is the churn. I mean, the churn became much higher. So we because some women just went back to their jobs and they cannot do the better work on the side. So, but we're hiring a lot. We're recruiting a lot of new associates. So the recruiting is doing great. The only thing is that once the churn goes back to normal and we keep the recruiting, then we'll get the growth back.
Yep.
So people will start to understand, and they need to see the fourth quarter, which is going to be better because the year always closes stronger. And then next year is going to be better. And then the other thing that is happening is that we are a new public company. We de-SPAC in March of last year, no? So people have seen a few quarters. They also need to understand that there's some, you know, seasonality to the quarters. Like the first one is very strong, second and third are slightly slower, the fourth comes back. So they also need to get to that.
You trade in the US and you report in pesos. I think the dividend is paid out in pesos. Obviously it comes in dollars, but it's paid out in pesos. So I think you've got a little bit of a de-SPAC, you know, height of COVID, all these issues, Mexican financials. I just think there's little bits of headwinds that you'll get over it eventually, but there's just a little bit of extra headwind there.
As I said, I think in a few quarters, people will understand the growth better. People will be more comfortable. The dividend is super strong. Even though it's in pesos, it's 7%. It's a great dividend. And the company is going to grow it because the company is a growing company. And then there are a lot of new things in the pipeline that are going to make this company be way much better. But those things, unfortunately, I cannot talk about them right now.
Let me ask one other question on Betterware, and then we'll kind of wrap this up. You know, you mentioned the dividend a couple of times, which that's great. But my companies, you know, I always think share repurchases are more tax efficient. They can be dialed up and down a little bit easier. Investors don't get as pissed off if you dial back a share repurchase as if you cut a dividend. You've mentioned the trades at a pretty value multiple, all this sort of stuff. Why not go with a share repurchase instead of a dividend here?
No, I think that the dividend will stay because it's a long-term policy of the company. We have great cash flow. The best proof of the cash flow is paying the dividends. So I think that there's nothing like getting a dividend. I think that in technical terms, a repurchase is equivalent, but getting those dividends is something that we've done and that stockholders appreciate, and it's at the core of what the founders believe. But on top of that, we can do repurchases. And we have already, you know, approved it at the board. So the company could start doing some repurchases. And that card is already there. And it probably would start to be used in the near future.
Let me ask one more question just about DD3. You know, SPAC one, Betterware, growth company. But, you know, households, consumer distributed, all that. SPAC two, Codere, online gaming, gambling, obviously growth company there as well. But aside from the word growth, I can't think of, you know, Betterware and Codere are pretty much on two other ends of the spectrum. At some point, hopefully you guys are going to launch a third SPAC. Is there any overarching theme that's connecting these guys? Is it just growth? Or with the third SPAC, you mentioned branded generics, which is a little bit more of a value play. Are you guys just open to wherever the world takes you?
I mean, first of all, the third SPAC is ready to go. As soon as we close Codere, we'll launch our third SPAC because we understand the SPAC business, we like it, and we want to continue doing SPACs. In terms of the companies we bring to market, I think the most important thing that we look for, because we put a lot of our capital in the SPACs, is we want to generate great returns to our investors.
So that's what everyone wants to hear.
The key thing is returns, okay? So after that, then we understand that for stocks to work in NASDAQ, you need to have high growth. So we look for growth. I mean, we could do a value play and we look at one, and it could work, but that value play had 20%, 25% growth. So it wasn't only value. But we think that growth is the key, that within the NASDAQ market wants growth. And we want to generate very strong growth. And then more and more, we're looking into tech. Even in what we do at DD3, if I would tell you the biggest mistake that Jorge, my partner, and I made when we started DD3 is not onboarding the tech guy from day one. It took us 2-3 years to get. Today, we have a great technology guy with us, Patch. He's fantastic. And we're using tech for everything. And we're learning a lot and we're involving in that. So I think that, we want growth and we want tech. And that's what we're looking for.
Perfect. Perfect. And obviously, it's always going to be a LATAM focus, I'm assuming.
Yeah, of course. And also, in particular in Mexico, where we are based, the ratio of SPACs to opportunities is in favor of SPACs. Because there are another 3 or 4 SPACs in Mexico, but compared to the size of the country, 100 million people, a million, $1.2 trillion economy. I mean, I think that today the ratio, there are many opportunities more than SPACs. So yep. We are not like in the US today, there are too many SPACs and there are competition. In Mexico, when we find an opportunity, we're not competing with another SPAC. We might compete with a traditional IPO or with a private equity firm, but not with another SPAC.
And not to give, again, not to be too much softball, but I'm not really aware of any other SPACs that have successfully closed a Latin American deal. I could be off. I mean, I'm saying that off the top of my head, but after Codere closes, you guys will have done 2 of them. I mean, that's great proof of concept. If I was a company selling, I'm very aware of the risks of SPACs going to the close and going and saying, hey, we had $200 million in trust, but we only have $4 million left after redemption. Like, you guys can go and say, hey, we've successfully closed 2 of them. Look at our track record. Like, there's going to be cash at the back end. If I was selling, I would probably sell to you guys at a much better price than some fly-by-night SPAC who doesn't have that track record.
I mean, we're really focused on building the track record and we want to build it for the targets. But as I said before, I mean, the key thing for us is that we want to generate high returns for our investors and we put a lot of our capital into the SPACs.
Perfect. Martin Werner, I'm going to wrap it up here unless you have anything else.
No, thank you very much for the opportunity, Andrew. Very nice meeting you.
Hey, thank you so much for coming on. I'm looking forward to the deal closing in mid-November. I'm looking forward to SPAC 3 and looking forward to chatting soon.
Great, me too. Thank you very much, Andrew.